Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the end of an era, and we're hitting the third rail. Good morning again, everyone, and welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian. The final space shuttle will launch this morning, scheduled for 11:26 a.m., weather permitting. The cost savings from ending the shuttle program are in the billions, with a B, billions of dollars. And even though that money is slated to be used elsewhere by NASA these days, no federal program is guaranteed. For those of you who have been following the debt ceiling negotiations in Washington, you may have been surprised by the news yesterday that President Obama is seeking a substantially bigger deal than previously expected and has even suggested that changes to Medicare and Social Security be part of the negotiations. Here is President Obama speaking to reporters after yesterday's meeting.
What we decided was that staffs, as well as leadership, will be working during the weekend and that I will reconvene congressional leaders here on Sunday. With the expectation that at that point, the parties will at least know where each other's bottom lines are and will hopefully be in a position to then start engaging in the hard bargaining that's necessary to get a deal done. I want to emphasize that nothing is agreed to until everything's agreed to, and the parties are still far apart on a wide range of issues.
So what might be the president's own bottom line? Joining me now to talk about that is Carrie Budoff-Brown, staff writer for Politico.com. Carrie, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So what happened yesterday during negotiations between the White House and congressional leaders? It's being reported that there are three different potential packages being considered. Is that right?
That is true, but he's actually already ruled out the smallest one, the kind of short-term deal that would get the debt limit increased for only a few months. Senate Republicans have been the most vocal in putting that out there. The president told leaders yesterday he will veto such a package. And essentially that means he wants to get something that will bring this, will put this issue to rest at least until after the 2012 elections. So that leaves really only two options on the table, something around the ballpark of $2.5 trillion, which is what Vice President Biden was looking at in his negotiations, or this really big package, this $4 trillion-plus package that would, in the president's view, get this issue off his plate, for many years to come. Because if they only do the $2.5 trillion package, the thought is that they'll have to come back at some point. And the president's looking at his longer-term political prospects, and he certainly doesn't want to see a replay of this every, 6 months or 18 months, even every 2 years.
Well, what are the potential changes to Social Security being discussed?
The change that we're hearing most often is this idea that you'll change the way the cost of living is calculated, which is pretty complicated. But what it would mean is over many years, people would see a benefit, a scale back of their benefits, because it's a change in the way benefits are calculated. That is a possibility. The question is the money that's generated from that. It's about $300 billion. It's over 10 years, a big pot of money. The question is, does that money, will it go back into shoring up Social Security, which is what the president has always said he wanted to do if he dealt with Social Security in the context of a broader deficit reduction deal, or does it go to bringing down the debt? And that's a key question that hasn't been answered, and one that progressives and liberals are really going to be watching for, because it says a lot about whether the president is shifting his priorities, is shifting his strategy and his stance. So there is so much, Democrats on the Hill are just beside themselves. They've said they've worked, months to try to get Social Security out of the discussion, and here they are, they're having to deal with it.
All right. Well, we want to open our phones to our listeners, conservative listeners. Please tell us if changes to entitlement programs like Social Security and Medicare would make revenue increases more palatable for you. And liberal listeners, would you be willing to give something up in order to get a deal that includes closing tax loopholes, for example? Call us, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can post a comment on our website, WNYC.org, and click on the Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer, and my guest is Carrie Budoff-Brown. She's a staff writer for Politico. Carrie, let's come back to the Social Security part of these negotiations and talk a little more specifically. Now, I read a bit about this, and that they're looking at inflation measures when talking about reducing the costs. Can you explain a little bit more in detail about how that works into the calculation?
Yeah, I mean, what it does, like I said before, is that there's this belief that calculator is not an accurate one, and that by changing it, it will be a more it'll earn back some money for the government, of course. The downside, though, is that over, many years, I mean, I saw something this morning where something like over 30 years, the average beneficiary will see something like a 3% overall cut in the benefits they would have received just because of the calculator being changed.
But Carrie, why was it, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but sure. I just have to ask, why wasn't that changed before?
Because it's a really hard thing to do politically. The idea of changing the way the CPI is calculated was brought up quite frequently during the healthcare negotiations, for example, which I covered pretty intensely. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to just the fact that it can be interpreted, and rightly so, as a benefit cut for Social Security beneficiaries. And that's a really tough thing to sell to people. And it doesn't seem to keep faith with that whole with the contract. You pay in, you expect a certain amount of benefits, and while economists and folks push for this because they say it's a more appropriate calculation, it means people over a period of time wouldn't get what they would have expected. Now, granted, 3%. It means different things to different people, but to some people it means a lot, and that's hard to defend.
Now, I do want to get to taxes and revenue in a moment and of course, take a couple of calls because they are coming in. But one more question on Social Security. Mm-hmm. Congressional Democrats are not happy. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said, quote, "Do not consider Social Security a piggy bank for giving tax cuts to the wealthiest people in our country," end quote. But let's play a different clip of Nancy Pelosi speaking to reporters yesterday.
If there's a table that Social Security is on its own table. And any savings should be plowed back into making Social Security stronger. And the same applies to Medicare as well.
That's House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi yesterday. So what does she mean when she says on its own table?
What she's saying is that any kind of changes to Social Security that would bring, let's say, more revenue, that would raise revenue, it cannot be used there cannot be any kind of effort to take money from Social Security or cut benefits and use that money in a different pot. Meaning, this is why this is such a startling thing for a lot of Democrats. Is they've really argued pretty harshly in the last few months that Social Security is not a contributor to the medium or long-term deficit problem. It should stand on its own. It needs to be shored up, but it should not be used to fund other, other things, bring down the debt or the deficit. That it should just be kept separate. This is the Democratic line, and even Republicans buy into that. And I think there's this blurring of the lines where there could be savings or revenues raised by cutting Social Security benefits. And if on the other side you don't see the tax cuts eliminated for the wealthy, then it'll be viewed as cutting the benefits of Social Security recipients to maintain the tax cuts for the wealthy. So there's this kind of, two different pots that people are trying to keep the Social Security walled off from the broader deficit reduction talks. And it's just not clear right now how separate they are or whether a deal in the end, any money raised through Social Security cuts or you know, changing the way it's programs administered that'll go towards Social Security versus something else.
All right, I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer, and my guest is Carrie Boudoff-Brown. She is a staff writer for Politico, and we're talking about the debt negotiations in Washington, D.C. We have a lot of calls, so let's take a few. David is calling from Staten Island. David, you are on WNYC.
Hello. I tend to be a conservative, but when you ask, do I find it palatable to have cuts in Social Security and Medicare, would it make me feel better about something else? The answer is, if we do not have cuts for Social Security, Medicare, and a whole bunch of other things, but they're right on top. If we don't have these cuts, we will destroy the financial future of our children and grandchildren due to our own selfishness. And therefore, it's not whether I find it palatable. It's whether I want my children and grandchildren to have a decent life in this country.
All right, so thinking ahead to the future, David, thank you very much for your call. David identifying himself as a conservative. Let's take Cordelia, who is calling in from the Bronx. Cordelia, you are on WNYC. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi. My name is Cordelia. I tend to be on the very liberal side. But I find that that the Republicans are not dealing in good faith. When George Bush was in office, spending ballooned. Okay, we started with a surplus. We ended up with a major deficit. The debt ceiling was raised 7 times while George Bush was in office. And now, all of a sudden, Republicans can't stand to raise the debt ceiling unless we're going to cut what they call individual entitlements. And nobody has they don't talk about cutting what corporate welfare. What about the entitlements or the subsidies to these giant, these huge corporate farmers? This is not family farms that are getting subsidies for growing corn, for ethanol, or other subsidies. These are farms that can well afford to pay taxes.
Agribusiness.
And don't need subsidies. They make profits without it.
Agribusiness. Thank you, Cordelia, for your call. Two very different points of view and pretty much on different subjects, but on the table both in Washington, D.C. Let's take a third call from Mark. And Mark, where are you calling from?
Yes, I'm calling right now. I'm calling from Williamsburg.
Thank you very much for calling in. And you are on WNYC with Jamie Floyd and Carrie Boudoff-Brown.
Okay. Well, I think the reason why this is all a red herring with the Republicans as a strategy with this debt ceiling is an artificial construct. Whatever happened to the notion of raising the cap on salary deductions, which now I think ends at about $109,000? Why was single payer never worked out with the Congressional Budget Office? It was never even worked out on paper how much a single payer Medicare for All would save in terms of costs. So there seems to be an intractable pull towards this privatization model, which occurred somewhere down in Chile, which threw the whole country into complete chaos. And I just think it's incumbent upon the people to really start raising their voices up. If I could hire a skywriter to ride across the sky in top of the White House, you know, I would do it. And I would do it every day until Obama looked up in the sky and he could see what the real deal is with the 300 million people who live here, not the 400 people who control 90% of the wealth.
Well, you don't have a skywriter, but you did have your opportunity here today on WNYC, Mark, and we thank you for calling in. thank you for calling, Mark. Let me turn back to you, Carrie. There is a great notion out there that the debt ceiling is somewhat of a fiction, and in fact, we had a couple of segments yesterday here on WNYC, one with Senator DeMint, and another segment on this whole constitutional issue of the 14th Amendment, during which several callers suggested that the debt ceiling is somewhat of a fiction or perhaps constitutionally questionable. Say a little bit about that. I know we're here to talk specifically about Medicare and Social Security, and I'm going to come back to the second part of our conversation, which is Medicare, in just a moment. But how much of this really is in the control of the Secretary of the Treasury, Mr. Geithner, or perhaps in the control of the executive branch, and how much of it is a real limit that we're going to come up against on August 2nd or 3rd?
I mean, there's certainly been increased focus on these two different poles of the political spectrum, from Jim DeMint saying it's an artificial construct, it's not going to be the catastrophe that the administration has suggested. If the debt limit's not reached, there's a way to prioritize debt payments over other payments, so therefore there will not be a default. On the other side of the spectrum, on the liberal side, there's this idea that the debt limit itself is unconstitutional and that the president can order the Treasury to continue paying the debt. I believe from my reporting and from being in the White House, this is neither argument is being seriously considered or thought. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly they disagree with Jim DeMint. On the other side, the Secretary of the Treasury, Timothy Geithner, in the meeting yesterday laid out pretty stark terms, the catastrophe that he would see ensuing if this is not raised, if the debt limit is not raised, and suggesting that this constitutional option is not something that they will use. And so that's certainly ideas on the edges of this debate, but I think even most people in Washington, most Republicans, by far most Democrats, and the White House don't see any other option but to
compromise.
Limit.
Right. And indeed, what you call the edges, some would call the fringe. And this is why we are talking about what ultimately will likely be some degree of compromise, which gets us back to the issue of Social Security and Medicare. I now want to ask you about Medicare. What are the potential changes that the president and congressional leaders are talking about there?
Well, sure. I mean, the president is not in any way entertaining the idea that came out of the House Republican budget earlier this year to turn the Medicare program into largely a voucher program. That is a bright line for the White House. While even though the president has said he'll welcome any and all ideas, of which that's why Social Security kind of crept back into the discussions. They were trying to create this environment where anybody can bring forward a good idea. AIDS yesterday told me that is absolutely not part of the conversation. So that's one edge of the possible changes that I think can be assured that will not be something the president would sign. However, there is this other sort of middle option where you start trying to wring more savings out of the Social Security system, either by cutting payments to hospitals further, changing some of the elements of the health care law that passed last year, where some hospitals were excluded from jurisdiction under a health care board that would try to wring savings out of the system over time, and then there could be changes to that. Now, there are also just other ways to expedite some of the savings. There are lots of pilot programs in the health care law that aim to change the way health care is delivered, expediting those. There's lots of ideas that didn't make it into the health care law 2 years ago or a year ago that are part of the mix, that are something that the president would entertain because, quite frankly, he wanted more of it last year, but couldn't because, became such a political football. But there are ways of doing that. And the upshot will be that the political rhetoric around it will be that the benefits are being cut in some way or another. It just filters down. If you cut payments to hospitals, you could see fewer people getting care. I mean, these are the political arguments you'll see. So it's an extraordinarily passionate debate. This is why it was so hard to pass the health care law a year ago, and we're seeing a replay of this. We will see, but given that there's just so much else that's being discussed, there's not as much of a focus right now on Medicare. Now that Social Security in particular is part of the discussion, but there are potentially hundreds of billions of dollars in savings that they could be looking at.
Now, where do you think, as we come to the end of the segment, where do you think the party's bottom lines are, really, both parties? Because, for a time it seemed like the Democrats, Social Security was just past the bottom line. That's why they called it the third rail, which is how we started this segment. It was just an untouchable. And now here we are talking about it. Has this always been part of the discussion and it's just now being made public? And for Republicans, they say there's just not going to be any taxing. We're just not going to do it. In reality, we talked about the fringes or the edges, as you politely called it. But in reality, for the vast majority of each party, what's the bottom line?
For the Republicans, it's how you get the $1 trillion in new tax revenue, potentially to get a kind of $4 trillion deal. That is, I think you can sell certain revenue increases that come from selling government property, maybe changing the calculation of the cost of living. But when it's going to get to scaling back the tax cuts for wealthier families, anything that deals with the Bush tax cuts, which is really what Republicans think they're going to have to come to if they do a big deal, is letting some of the Bush tax cuts expire. That, quite frankly, is just the numbers are not there for the House, in the House. And that raises the question of how do you get to a $4 trillion deal without getting a significant amount of tax revenue. Republicans believe that has to come out of changing the tax rates. It's simply a no-go. So that is the big problem for them. For Democrats, it's going to be using Social Security to pay down the debt. That's not going to happen. So they're going to have to keep Social Security walled off. And I think they're going to have to see some kind of job creation, job stimulation, effort in there, especially after today's job report, the idea of a payroll tax or more unemployment insurance. I mean, Democrats are worried about that.
Yeah.
And even just the Medicare cuts, the scope of the Medicare cuts, it really for Democrats is going to come down to protecting Social Security, Medicare, doing it in a smarter way, in their view, and protecting Social Security.
Well, and you mentioned jobs. Our next segment is all about jobs and job creation. But for now, I want to say thanks to you, Carrie, for coming on today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Our guest has been Carrie Budoff-Brown. She's a staff writer for Politico.com. I am Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. Up next, former Obama advisor Van Jones will talk all about jobs and job creation.